Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Betting Trust. My name is Varun. I am your host and moderator, joined, as always, by three of my good friends and the best damn sports analysts around. Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Gentlemen, another exciting week at DC Sports. Y'all ready to go?
There's much to talk about.
All right, let's get things started with our reigning, defending world champion Washington Nationals, who, of course, are still the regular season champions.
We're sliding into baseball.
A lot of speculation at the beginning of the season because the Nats did have an outbreak, therefore delaying their opening day, but they finally were able to start playing some baseball. And they are currently 5-7, their record, which accounts for about fourth in the NL East. They started off strong with their opening day win against the Braves, but did taper off a little bit. This could be drawn from a variety of factors, but I think the biggest factor is being we had a lot of players out due to COVID, and we just haven't been, 100%. Some things that really came, like I mentioned, nail-biter finish on opening day against the Braves. Juan Soto had a walk-off RBI. You love to see it. You love to see Soto continuing to play like the beast he is. So let's talk specifically about that game. We're not going to get into each and every individual game, as that will take too long. But let's at least talk about the opening day game against the Braves. Want to get your all's thoughts, reactions, just generally how you felt after that game.
So I wanted to ask Chris, actually, how different was it, like, as opposed to a regular game going to this weird COVID season and all the restrictions that they have? Was it like normal, or was it like you had to be like in your group and like head over or shuttle, like a, I don't know. What was it like?
It was definitely different, obviously. Like, there wasn't a lot of people there for the start. It felt kind of eerie, kind of like we weren't really supposed to be there 100%. There is a lot more rules and restrictions. Like, at one point, my dad was drinking a beer just next to a bar, and a woman yelled at him for having his mask down and drinking a beer.
Jeez. Oh my
God. You can drink it at the seats, and, like, they don't really enforce the rules, but if you're in the concourse, there was one woman who was... She was kind of big. Like, it was literally just my family, like me, my dad, my mom, off to ourselves, and she yelled at us. So, other than that, I imagine they'll start to loosen those restrictions as the season goes on. But it was, other than that, it was fairly standard. You can't order food just in line. You have to do like a mobile order. You can't just walk up to the food counter and say, hey, like, I walked up to a sausage stand and was like, hey, can I just get a sausage? And she was like, no, you have to order it on the mobile app. I was like, fuck this, I'm not doing all this.
That's so dumb.
Yeah.
Like, how does the mobile app prevent COVID?
Right. I was like, what's the difference between me just asking you right here in front of you, looking like right at you with both of our masks on, and you just making me the food, than me walking 5 steps back and getting on my phone and doing the same thing?
You should have pulled up the mobile app like right in front of her.
Typed it in and then showed her the order.
That's basically like, there was a couple literally not 5 steps away from me using the mobile app to order their food from this woman who's 5 steps away from them. Like, they could have just yelled at her, like, this is what I want to order.
Make some of this stuff zero sense. Crazy.
Yeah, like that part made zero sense to me. I get you have to be safe, but
some of it is just...
You can do this normally. Like, you don't mobile apps at restaurants.
Exactly. Like, that was a step to... Like, you can do the non-contact thing. You can order the food. You can stay 6 feet away, which they were doing all of that in the stadium. But the mobile app thing, I was like, this seems like a step too far.
How many fans were at the stadium when you were there? Was it 5,000? 10,000?
It was 5,000. The actual attendance was like 4,800 because of family that didn't come and things like that.
And that's what it is right now, too.
I know they're supposed to up it. I don't know if they did already or not, but it's supposed to go up to 10,000. I think that starts in May.
Okay.
It's gonna greatly depend on the vaccination rate and like how the numbers are looking.
Well, they've already gone up.
To slowly.
They've already gone up to 10,000. They already got the permit to go up to 10,000 from the governor. Like, when they let the Caps and the Wizards invite fans, they also increased the amount that the Nats and the DC United could, up to 25%. So that would be about 10,000 for the Nats.
True. And, I mean, DC, well, the rest of the country tomorrow, April 19th, is when they're going to be, is when the vaccines are going to be open to the entire country, like just 16 plus. So,
which would be today.
Should.
Tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow. Tomorrow would be what we're recording this on the 18th. Wow. So, based on the vaccination rates, everything is looking real nice. I think we're about to hit, no, I'm not even joking, we're about to hit half the country with at least one dose tomorrow, possibly.
Back,
I think
to,
we're at like 49.
Sports.
Yep. Yeah, so other than the game experience. Everyone
wants to talk more about the vaccine.
Other than the game
just,
experience,
I,
though, that was
like, I just want to be optimistic.
I know. I get you're just happy. I think we all are ready to get back to normal. I saw a picture of like a stadium in Australia this past week. It was Australia or New Zealand that hasn't had a COVID case in 12 months, and it was just full to the brim. I was like, must be fucking nice.
Yeah, it must but be.
Anyway, must be. Nice to be.
All right. All right. Back to the Nats.
I think that we kind of look at an overview of like the past week or so, because that opening day game was so long ago that at this point it's kind of a moot point what happened during that game.
I prefer to remember the happy memories of the opening day rather than, than the rest of the games.
I did see on opening day, you know how the Nats have the president's race?
Yeah.
That was god awful. I really hope they just throw that away. No. I love the president's race as it normally is. But the president's race, you didn't even see the presidents. It was all on the screen, and they raced through, like, the concourse. It wasn't even, like, happening right then. It could have happened that day or, like, a month earlier.
The presidents are protected with those... suits on.
I was like, I mean, they can't go on the field and whatnot, so I get that.
No, they're not fully protected. You have to put a mask on the mascot, and then you have them run.
Oh my god!
But I was like, this. Like, even my mom, who loves that sort of stuff, she was like, "This is stupid. Why do they even do this?"
Yeah.
So that was a disappointment for the COVID. I think they should just throw that away for the year.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyways. Back to the actual team. Max Scherzer, not Steven Strasburg, Max Scherzer, that first game looked pretty bad. My dad was like, he's done. His fastball isn't as good as it used to be, which it is. It's not the same overpowering fastball, but he still has got his stuff like he showed in the most recent start. But outside of that, Steven Strasburg was the opposite. He looked fantastic that first game with 6 scoreless, and then came back this most recent game. Turned out he got injured.
Do you think he played like shit because he was injured?
Probably.
Or did he get hurt?
So he didn't. After he came out after that game where he played terrible, he said that he didn't have any injuries or anything. He was just like, "Yeah, no, I feel fine. It was just a bad game," kind of thing.
Yeah, he might have been lying though.
Yeah, may have.
Who knows? Steven Strasburg has never been an open person for. Yeah. His injuries.
Or just in general.
Because
he just has a ton of injuries. Like, what is he supposed to say? He's like, all right, this time I got
Yeah, he is a quiet guy.
Yeah. So that's possible.
But I guess he has right shoulder inflammation, which hopefully doesn't get worse. Hopefully it's just that. And he's back in, like, one or two starts.
Hopefully it's one of those things they're just trying to be precautious with it early in the season. And,
yeah.
You know, like, if it were something later in the year, maybe they'd push him a little more, but...
It's way too early in the teams.
It's weird to like manage an injury-prone player like that, especially with a season as long as baseball. Like, when do you decide to like take those early precautions? When do you decide to ride it out? And other stuff like that. I guess it's all up to the sports medicine folks and the GM.
It's probably a team kind of decision. They probably have conversations every day about it.
Wasn't it a Rizzo decision to shut him down the 2012 season? I mean, that was one of those decisions where it was probably very split in the building and the GM
made the
final decision. We're going to shut him down, and that was a season we could have won the World Series, but you know, you never know. There are a lot of years we could have.
I don't know that team. That team was pretty immature, is the thing.
Harper was new.
Yeah. And they did have that same team, like, the next year, and they won the division and didn't win the World Series, so.
Yeah.
And Harper has a lot of years, but just imagining he missed out on the ring. He may never get a ring.
Depends on what the Phillies do in the next decade.
They've been terrible. They got spanked by the Cardinals last night, 9-4.
Yeah.
Good day for that. One of my coworkers is a Phillies fan, so that's always a good sign.
Always a rub-in.
Gotta talk shit
but
at work.
All the Nats are back from COVID, finally. That's
yeah, let's talk about that, because Kyle Schwarber
has
been looking pretty good so far.
Yeah, Kyle Schwarber's been
a home run.
He's been solid for them. He's hitting .269 average, .296 on base, .500 slugging, and .796 OPS. So, slugging is solid. I mean, his OBP is never going to be good. That's just not the hitter he is. If he hits .269 average for the entire year, that's I'm good. Happy with that for Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's a successful normal. Signing if he hits that high all year long.
Yeah.
And also if he continues to hit bombs, my God, that shit went into space.
That was bomb is does, putting man. It lightly.
That's what he does.
112 mile an hour off the bat. 400. I heard that was longer than any home run he hit in the home run derby.
Because it was him and Harper down to the wire
right.
that year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he annihilated that ball. Juan Soto and Bryce Harper are the only, and Adam Dunn, I guess, way back when.
Oh yeah,
are the only lefties I think I've ever seen hit the ball that far in the right field.
I was doing a little research, and Harper's longest home run with us was like 472 or something like that, and Juan Soto's career long is identical, 463.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of what kind of a home run that is. I think it's just annihilated.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen very often.
Seams tore off that ball. It was like, man, that was a hype home run, especially for a guy that just joined the team like not two or three games ago. That had to be a good feeling for him coming, and with the fans in the stadium too.
0-0,
and there's no scores. Nobody's doing anything.
Just knock off. Oh yeah, man, set up perfect.
Max Scherzer's throwing a gem earlier. The bullpen doing the job. They've been doing. Bullpen's been doing well.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Speaking, Tanner Rainey's been...
He's been shaky.
Yeah, he's still trying
Who's
to
Who's been really shaky is Corbin. Holy shit.
Yeah, fuck, I don't want to talk about him. I said at the beginning of the year, Joe Ross is going to be our number three.
It's looking like it.
Which I still think is what's going to be the case, whether Corbin was really good or not. I have a lot of confidence in Joe Ross. I think he's going to be really good. And he's shown kind of sparks of it and then had setbacks in the past, like with COVID and then a couple of injuries here and there. And he even pitched fairly well in that one World Series game when Max Scherzer couldn't pitch. He ended up getting the loss for it. But he pitched fairly well, and then the bullpen just blew the doors open.
He played the way we needed him to play.
Right. Like, I think he gave up home games. I think he gave up maybe three or four runs in like six or seven innings, which isn't bad.
It's the World Series.
For a last-minute decision,
right,
the rest of the team's got to step up if you want to win that game, and he did what you needed him to do.
And then the bullpen I think gave up like five or six runs in the last four or five innings, or three or four innings.
I remember that was a bullpen.
I definitely remember that too, because I was there.
The look on your
we
face
have the picture.
But yeah, outside of Rainey and Fetty have been the two real bad.
Fetty just came off a decent game,
and
though.
And Corbin, obviously.
Fetty needs... he's always been up and down, you know? I want to see some more consistency.
But I feel like Fetty's up is just average. Like, there is no, you're not going to get a great game out of Fetty.
It's not spectacular like a Scherzer or Strasburg or even a Corbin spectacular game looks like. It's good enough.
Yeah.
If he can do that all the time, then, you know, what more do you want from him? But, yeah, he needs to be consistent.
Outside of Rainey and then Luis Avalon, pretty much the entire bullpen has an under one whip.
Brad Hand looked good.
Brad Hand has been really
Finnegan's
good.
Finnegan's been all right.
Hudson's been pretty good, he had a bad game first game or two, but he's been pretty solid since. Sam Clay just over one at 1.13. I think Rainey will collect it. He'll get it back down.
I think so, too. I still think Rainey's got a future as a closer, but it just may not be. It's not going to be this year.
It's not going to. Brad Hand's the guy this year, I think. And then Hudson is number two. That's a really good back three, though. Like, if they're in the playoffs and we've got Rainey, Hudson, Brad Hand as 7, 8, 9, that's I'm happy about that.
I mean, we basically got through the playoffs 2 years ago with just Doolittle and Hudson being on the game. And guys like Rainey kind of coming in good enough in spot treatments and Suero. But
well, we used the starters as a lot more of a crutch that year.
Yeah, Corbin was probably the most valuable reliever.
Bullpen piece, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think he could still be like that in the playoffs. If we use Scherzer, Strasburg, and Ross is the 1-2-3 in the playoffs, and then Corbin as a fourth piece, as a bullpen, and then starter when we need him. I think that would
apparently,
be
good.
Because he has that different spin on the ball than like Strasburg and Scherzer, and Joe Ross are all fastball pitchers.
Apparently, Will Harris has been doing some light work and might have his season debut soon.
Yeah, I mean, he's... If he comes back and contributes, like, that's only going to be a positive.
And let's hope so, because
he's making a lot of money.
I'd rather have him, and you know, he can be a fourth piece behind the other three. And it's definitely a good addition. And Wander Suero has been impressive, surprisingly, which I still... Every time he takes the bump, I can't...
Hard to watch sometimes,
but he's just watch with your eyes closed and hope for the best. And then sometimes he performs, sometimes he doesn't. But he 0.95 whip, not bad.
No. So the bullpen overall has been solid. What would you say about our hitting? I would say inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, not being able to score one run, zero runs for those two or three games. Robles has continued to struggle, which is not fun.
He needs to be our, you want him to be good in that leadoff hitting spot, but we've been putting him back at the ninth spot a couple times.
Who's been
hitting? I'm fine with that if he can produce. I do like that lineup with Soto as the number two and Trey as the number one. With Schwarber and Bell as the 3-4, but. I would prefer, obviously, Robles going one and then Turner two, but if he's not hitting well enough to hit in that one spot, you got to move him down.
Jan Gomes is having a good start.
He is. 368, 400, 526, 926 splits.
Yep.
Which is...
I always knew Jan Gomes was the most successful player on the team.
Technically, Josh Harrison's doing better right now.
Yeah, he is.
I always knew Josh Harrison was the most successful person.
Josh Harrison, 556, 600, 778, 1,378 OPS.
Wow.
Five games, which is a very small sample
size. That looks like my MLB The Show character. batting that much.
But
more likely, I'm curious at the trade deadline what our infield situation is going to look like and if we're going to want to keep Harrison at second and...
I mean, if he hits 556 all year.
Yeah, I mean, if he hits it all year, shit.
No, but there's been rumblings about Chris Bryant again for the 600th time. I'm like, no, I don't want him.
I don't either.
He's past his prime. He's
either going to
be
a rental.
And I like Josh Harrison at second and Starlin Castro enough to have them sit there. I want to upgrade at third, really, and move Starlin Castro back to second and have Josh Harrison as a utility guy. But
I think at the trade deadline, if we're looking for some more depth, there probably are going to be better
options for rentals.
There'll be better options for
a half-season rental.
Another Josh Harrison kind of guy who can be a utility guy. And
they don't need a Josh Harrison. They've got too many Josh Harrison type of guys. They need, like, a starting third baseman, yeah.
That's, if it's like, a one-year rental, then...
That's the best they're going to get. They're not going to get anything better than a one-year rental.
And the best they're going to get is probably Chris Bryant.
Like, maybe an extra year under contract. But with the prospect pieces and the inability to part ways of Jackson Rutledge with Cade Cavalli, which I'm perfectly okay with. I don't want them to get rid of either one of those guys. It's going to be hard to...
We don't have that many prospects.
For a key boom who would probably be involved in a package, and then like the three or four, the top third or fourth prospect, maybe some draft picks.
Probably some draft picks.
Draft picks don't hold that much weight outside the first or second, though. That's the thing. But Yan Gomes, speaking of which, finally, first catcher to ever throw out Tim LeCastro in an MLB game. So he had 29 straight stolen bases, which is impressive for him. I like seeing the Yan Gomes defense coming into play.
It was. I watched that like 5 times today. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was a nice play. There was a nice play by, I think it was
Castro.
It was Castro out there. Yeah, it was a nice play by him making the tag on that.
And LeCastro actually ended the game with an injury. He's on the IL.
Damn, that sucks. Injury. That's unfortunate. He's fun to watch. He's like Trey Turner with his speed. Just if he's on the base paths.
Not as good of a hitter, though.
Not a lot of people are as good of a hitter as Trey Turner.
He's going to make contract talks.
Like Harrison, kind of like Harrison Bader from the Cardinals. He's okay with the bat, better in the field, better on the base paths. Yeah, Harrison Bader is really good in the field.
Kind of like Andrew Stevenson.
Don't get me started on Andrew Stevenson. My dad's in love with Andrew Stevenson. Every single time he'd be like, double. Andrew Stevenson.
I sound like your dad a little bit. Yeah. Both with the love for Andrew Stevenson and the fact that you see one bad game from Scherzer and you're like, it's over.
Is Andrew Stevenson the new Victor, or not Victor Robles?
There's Michael A. that are calling for Andrew. Well, okay, Andrew Stevenson's definitely better than Michael A. fucking Taylor. Without a doubt.
How's Michael A.
Taylor? What is this blasphemy I'm hearing? Oh my
God. I mean, he was good in preseason. I didn't really look up his stats before this. Blasphemous on my part, actually.
Oh, Michael A. Taylor's numbers have taken a dive.
Of course they have.
He's had no hits for multiple games.
Of course they have. No, he's garbage.
No. His batting average went from like 750 to like 273. It's going to keep going down.
So he's playing like an actual Michael Taylor, and he's not just all of a sudden an MVP.
He's just going through a lot right now. Let the man breathe.
He's going through a lot. It's Kansas City, dude. It's like,
and that's why he's going through a lot, because he has to play in Kansas City.
He gets to play at one of the most beautiful stadiums, bruh, with one of the most
he can dap approving up fan bases. He can
dap. Patrick Mahomes is his minority owner.
Yeah. He's got a 273 batting average, 304 on base, 432 slugging, 736 OPS.
Yeah, but his last few games, if you looked at the individual lines, he's had no hits in multiple, in like at least the last 3 games.
Josh Harrison's doing better than him.
He is. Josh Harrison, man, he's off to a good start.
And you know, Andrew Stevenson's not doing as well, which is kind of disappointing. Yeah, but the other three hitters are doing much better.
It's always weird to me to see athletes, both active and retired, being minority owners someplace. Like, recent news was, Patrick Mahomes buying ownership stakes, but also A-Rod buying the Timberwolves as a minority owner, I think.
Is that official yet, or is it
official for a while, I think. Okay. Yep.
Interesting.
It's just hopes. I thought it happened.
Wasn't A-Rod part of the hope to, or wasn't he trying to buy the Mets before?
Yeah, for a little.
And then it didn't happen, so switching over to basketball.
He broke up with J-Lo.
Damn.
Or she broke up with him.
Oh.
When did that happen?
I guess this is the gossip part of the
maybe a week or two ago. Podcast. I don't know it.
I hadn't heard that.
All I know is it came across, like, you know, when you log into your email and randomly you get those articles.
No. I do not have
Listen. A-Rod's just getting ready for the post-Rona City Boy summer. I get it.
God.
All right. Moving on back to Nationals baseball.
Yeah.
For the eighth
time. Right. Maybe we move on to the next topic. We got a lot to talk about today. We've spent a lot of time on the
Nats. Some meandering.
Yeah, okay. Well, there is something else that did come up in The Athletic. They actually threw out a contract extension expectation for Juan Soto. And they said it would be 12 years, $424 million.
God damn.
Doesn't seem that crazy. I mean,
how much was the Tatis?
I mean, it's
I don't know,
330 mil, 14 for Tatis.
Trout is making just as much as Soto would with this deal, I think.
So it's, Trout's Trout, bro. Trout's like he already shines above the rest.
426.5 million for Mike Trout.
Yep, and Mike Trout's like what?
Soto
12 years for it. So pretty much the same contract. I mean, honestly, that makes sense because for how good Soto has been and how good he could be, which he's just been improving every year, both with the stick and in the field. Yeah, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, and he's young. I mean, you're
talking about getting a guy that's actually really young. Oh, no, you're not. Never mind. But 424 for 12 years.
A lot, but...
Just $2 million less than Mike Trout.
Is it, you know, I mean, is it...
Yeah, that would be more than...
I don't know if that's...
That would be more than the best of the MLB.
Yeah.
Like... It would only be $2 million less than Trout. It's going to be way larger than Mookie Betts' contract, way larger than Lindor's contract, way larger than Tatis' contract.
And if you make a like, contract commitment of that, you know, that caliber, are you saying goodbye to Trey Turner?
It's hard to say though,
because you know Scherzer's not going to be on the books anymore. Scherzer, this is the last year of Scherzer's deal.
The team has not been spending that much in like the last 2 or 3 years. If you've looked at the contracts, they've
I thought they were still like up against the cap, but I think I'm thinking
they were. They are, but they've also who have they paid the last couple years? Like who have they really paid?
Corbin.
Corbin.
Yeah, Corbin's the biggest deal.
Corbin's not that pricey. I mean, he's pricey, but
I mean, the team's got... They're going to have money as some of these contracts come off the books.
Yeah, Scherzer's coming off the books next year. I mean, I don't know. They might do a 1 or 2 year thing with him. I don't know yet.
We'd be in the middle of Corbin's contract.
Yeah, but Corbin's not making nearly as much as Scherzer is.
Corbin's 6 years, 140.
Strasburg's making the most out of all of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess Steven Strasburg was.
That was the biggest signing. Huge signing.
But, I mean, Max Scherzer's going to be off the books next year anyways, and they've got... I mean, Joe Ross is probably going to take that, and then hopefully by that time, Cade Cavalli or Jackson Rutledge will be ready to come up. More likely Jackson Rutledge, but Cade Cavalli has been impressive. So, but anyways, maybe
we'll have a cheaper starting rotation. It's
going to be cheaper, that's for sure.
It's definitely feasible to keep at least one of Turner and Soto, but it might be possible to keep them both. It might be, but.
It's definitely possible. Yeah. They've been saving. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, lots of interesting things going for the Nats here. But ultimately, you know, the season's still early, still picking up. And I think they can work their way out of that fourth place slot pretty easily.
Concur.
Anyway. Yep. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about hockey. Let's talk about the Washington Capitals, shall we? They're currently 29-12-4. They're ranked first in the East, fourth overall in the NHL. A couple things coming out of them. So we had a trade, breaking news if you hadn't heard yet, although I'm sure you have by this point. The Capitals did trade Vrana, Panik, a 2021 first-round pick and a 2022 second-round pick for right winger Anthony Manta.
It was just the first-round pick for Anna for Manta. The second-round pick and Panik was just a dump. Yeah, that was a contract dump.
So far, Manta's proven his worth. Man has 3 goals in 3 games.
Manta.
Keep correcting.
I love this trade. I loved it the second I saw it.
Everybody
on Twitter hated it.
Yeah, I was going to say, this trade got pretty panned.
My sister is bigger Caps fan than I am.
Both of your sisters hated it.
She hated this trade.
I was going to say, because your sister hated it too, right?
Yeah, that's because she's in love with Jacob Vrana.
Yeah.
I texted her. I was like, goodbye, Jacob Vrana. She was like, that's mean. I'm like, oh.
This is a great trade for so many reasons. For one, we got Ponick's stupid contract off our books.
Yeah.
He was making a little too much for being a healthy scratch a lot
I mean, that's the second round pick for them to take that on, but giving them the second round pick in exchange for taking that.
It's a good move, though.
I think is also part of the reason that I also like, sorry for interrupting you, but part of the reason why this trade is good, the Ponick one, is I think they were able to give Sheary some of that money as well. So they were basically able to take Ponick's money off and give that to Sheary instead. Which
is playing way better.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. To talk a little bit about the Vrana and Mantha side of the trade, you have Jacob Vrana, who's been way too hot and cold. You've got Anthony Mantha, whose numbers, he's about a year and a half older. His numbers are very similar to Vrana, his offensive production. But he's a better skater. He's going to be a little bit better defensively, a little less hot and cold, a little more stable. And he's already under contract for the next three seasons after this year. Whereas with Jacob Vrana, it's like, are you going to pay the guy that's being really hot and cold? How much are you going to pay him? More likely than anything, he was probably going to walk this offseason and go to another team.
You could have paid him and kept him for that expansion draft
kind of thing. Yeah, but then it's like if the Kraken don't take him in the expansion draft. See, the thing is, you have to work out a deal with Vrana that the Kraken are going to be willing to take.
Yeah.
And if they don't take it, then we're going to have to keep him. And there are just a lot of questions there. And a guy like Mantha, if he keeps playing as well as he is, he's on a steal of a contract the next 3 years. And so that provides a little bit of cap stability for us. We know what we're looking at the next few years with the salary cap, and that's going to play into Ovechkin's extension and what we do as a team. And
I mean, the other kind of thing here is Mantha had a pretty similar point total to Vrana, but he was with the Detroit Red Wings.
There was no support, really.
Yeah, it's him and Larkin, and that's basically it on the Red Wings. There's not a lot of star power. There's not a lot of offensive output. The fact that he was able to produce even that much, I think, is impressive. Now he's able to take kind of a backseat, kind of be almost a role player, which he's just going to get more points with that. Like, if you're playing with, you know, TJ Oshie, Alex Ovechkin, Backstrom, all those guys on a daily basis versus pretty much Larkin, and that's it, you're going to get more points.
And he's showing it so far.
Yeah. And he's already got, well, two plus an empty net goal, so I guess technically three. Yeah. But I'll take a goal a day any day of the week. Obviously, that production will slow down. But
if he's a overall better skater and puck handler, and the production is about the same as Vrana's, you're getting a way better player.
You're also Capitals. Getting like similar production, but also Mantha's just a lot bigger than Jacob Vrana.
He's a lot bigger. He's a lot faster. I think he's just a lot better.
Yeah,
in all accounts, he's a lot more physical. Which the Caps have always been a physical team since 2005.
Yeah, and Jacob Vrana, his potential is still there. He can be a higher ceiling player than Mantha down the road. Okay. And when he's hot, he's hot. I mean, he's as hot as anybody. But, you know, it's just that the waves were just a little bit too significant. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you're cold, every time when we're in the playoffs, like the last 2 years, Ron has been nowhere to be found in the playoffs. He commits penalties. He's not scoring. And just overall not playing very well. You know, it's like you need guys to step up at the right time and, you know, to have a consistent player. Like, we've got enough good players on the Capitals, so to have just another consistent player rather than a guy that's up and down is going to, I think, help us for the playoffs.
Mantha is a bit up and down as well. True. He was with
the Red Wings. I've heard a lot about how he's streaky, like a super streaky player.
Mm-hmm. But again,
like, he had so many cold snaps and kind of stuff like that, which is why Red Wings fans are like,
he might be streaky in terms of his production, but I think if he's more consistent in the way that he's like on the ice, like skating and
he's also able to take more of a role player position with the Caps versus the Red Wings, who he had to be the star for them. Yeah. So maybe
to be consistent is easier for him here.
Yeah, it'll be easier to just kind of go out, do your job every day, you know, get a couple points here and there. The team's not looking for him to be the star. That's obviously Alex Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and Backstrom. And then Carlson, obviously. But he's going to be, if he's their down the stretch, their fourth or fifth most point scorer. I'm happy with that.
I'd be very happy with that.
If he just overtakes Oshie, which would be nice. They don't have to lean on Oshie in the future as much.
But I like
expansion draft. I'd be more willing for Oshie to part ways than if we add Mantha. Then
still hurt Verana. Honestly,
huh?
Letting Oshie part.
It would hurt.
I mean, yeah, obviously I don't want him to part. I'd love
to go a little sooner than maybe too late.
I think he's a great player, and I love... He's one of my favorite caps.
Can't hate him. There's nothing to hate about him.
Right, like, he's just fun. He's a good guy. There's nothing to hate about TJ Oshie, but it would be more acceptable to have him leave now with Mantha than, I think, first Verana.
I agree with that. And I liked Verana. Like it is bittersweet to see him go. Verana. Yeah, I didn't hate Verana, but
I liked him at the beginning.
When you think about our circumstances as part of the Capitals, and we're trying to win right now,
mm-hmm.
and we need a little more consistency than streakiness to
a little more maturity. Which
I,
is
has I liked been, regular season Verana. Playoff Verana.
I don't even like regular season Verana right now.
I think Mantha's just a better fit for us.
I mean, we've been talking time and time again about Laviolette trying to make the team essentially more mature, more hard-nosed, just consistent, professional. Verana has shown that I don't think he's capable of any of that. And he's immature. He doesn't show a lot of consistency. He never really felt like he was with the team, even when he was.
Especially this year.
Yeah, especially this year, which I think is part of the reason why he's gone now. I think he didn't want to play with the team that much. Even if he didn't say it, you just kind of see in his body language that. And you can tell from interviews from the GM and the Laviolette that they kind of, that's what they thought, and it was time to go.
Yeah, there's definitely a disconnect between Laviolette and Verana.
And
the GM. And it may have been before Laviolette.
I think it was.
Because, I mean, if you look at the last couple postseason runs where he's just not there, it's not just a problem with Verana and Laviolette, but I think with Laviolette, I think it just came to a head. And that's why we brought him here. I mean, we brought him here to kind of bring that stuff to a head, and changes have to be made. It doesn't mean we're flipping the script. We're just, we're making the changes that have to be made. And the contract situation with Mantha versus Verana, I think, is just so much more favorable for the Caps going forward.
Yeah, but I think the Detroit GM really felt like he made out there. With getting a first-round pick.
I think it was a win for both sides.
Yeah.
Like, the Red Wings just need draft picks right now. They just need to rebuild their kind of mediocre farm system, essentially. They got to get as many young pieces as they can so some of them can pan out.
If they think they want out, that's fine for them. I don't think the draft picks are all that valuable. Because you're drafting 18-year-olds. It's like baseball and it's like basketball. It's hard to project, and these are guys that are not going to contribute to the team.
And Mantha wasn't going to be that productive for them. Like, they're not going to win that much for 3 years at least. So they get a bit of a younger guy in Verana, a guy who they're not expecting to win. They're just expecting them to improve, get better. Maybe he can be a leader of that team. I don't think he's a leader, but. I think Larkin's their leader, so they've already got kind of like their captain. But they just need draft picks.
His first game with Detroit. I mean, he was coming right out of the penalty box and he was wide open. But I mean, Verana, man, he's got a high ceiling. He still does, but I think he needs to mature a little bit more and he needs to be a little more consistent.
Yeah, they've got Detroit's a young team. It's going to be 2 or 3 years before the Red Wings are relevant again. So they
might like be the I said, right place for them.
They're
in a better spot than the Sabres, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The Red Wings don't have a lot. The Sabres have. They've got some to go on more than the Red Wings. The Red Wings had a lot of contracts that were just albatross.
I don't know. With the Sabres, it's just like watching them is just like misery.
But they've for got probably their fans. They've got some young pieces that are going to be good. Like Eichel, he's pretty much guaranteed to be good for a long time. They've got pieces like that. Larkin's kind of the Red Wings guy, but I don't think he's as good as Eichel. Yeah, I think it was a win-win for both sides. I think both sides are pretty happy about the trades. I think looking at it from the drop, it's a lot that the Caps gave up.
But yeah, I was going to say, like, initially, like, at a surface level, it definitely looks like Detroit won it.
I mean, a first, second Vrana and Panic for one guy who pretty much has the same stats as Vrana, that's a lot from the rip. But when you think about it, when the Sheary, or when the Panic and
just like second the round pick was just Vrana.
A contract dump, and then it was basically Vrana in the first for the Manta, which I'm happy with.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff going for the Caps.
Ferd's enjoyed himself.
Oh yeah,
That's all I have to say about that. All right, let's go ahead and move forward. Talk about the Washington football team / Generals / Red Pandas / Red Wolves.
Oh, / Demon Cats, which is the newest name to the entree, which I love.
God help me.
Call me a Demon Cat, please.
Jesus. Lingerie football league team.
Demon Cats is just another way to say the Washington Furries.
It is a name for a roller derby team in Washington, D.C. Oh, I think they're like minor or something. Of there is course. No majors.
Oh, it's the majors, but you know, what's, just like, what's major?
What is a minor derby? Roller derby? But yeah.
Yep.
It's exciting. All right.
All right. The Washington football team. So with draft day coming closer and closer, it is in about 2 weeks, I think.
Yep, less than 2 weeks.
Less than 2 weeks coming up. We're starting to see a bigger picture, or rather a more clearer picture of what the team is going to look like. We're seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick, QB1, Taylor Heinicke, QB2, potentially Kyle Allen, or if the Washington football team decides to draft a QB, having them at QB3. Well, cool. Since you and Nick are the resident experts here, I want you to guys take lead on this one.
Chris has some takes.
The disrespect.
Real quick, why? I thought Kyle Allen was probably the number two quarterback.
That's kind of what I thought.
I was thinking that, but I think with the weird injury and like his like timetable to get into training camp, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I just think Heinicke will have a better grasp.
So let's say QB2 is a toss up between Heinicke and Kyle Allen.
Basically
or potentially their draft pick, which again, want you guys to go in a little more detail. We are seeing some rumblings of who they could potentially pick up. I mean, they could go into the top 10 to try and get Trey Lance or Justin Fields or Mac Jones in the top 10. They also, there's some rumors going around that they really like Kyle Trask, who's projected to go somewhere in the third or fourth round. So
Kyle Trask.
Jesus.
All right. Well, we know. Well, we know your thoughts on that. But again, guys, want to get your all's full thoughts on this as at least from a QB perspective. We'll go into the other positions in a second. But from a QB perspective, how are they looking? Do you see them drafting a QB in with their first pick?
Yeah. So Ryan Fitzpatrick will be the starter regardless of what they do in the draft. I don't see him getting benched for anything unless it's just like,
I mean, you don't sign him.
You don't sign $10 million. Yeah.
Right.
If you don't. And
until old Danny Boy decides to get Deshaun Watson.
I don't think anyone is trying to get Deshaun Watson.
Nobody's touching
right
him with a 20-foot pole right now.
Dude, imagine if the Texans pulled that off right before all the scandals hit. Like, they would be the best organization in sports.
Yep.
They would go from a
the
mess
best
of an
organization
to
is just making a decision within, like, a week.
It's making the right decision at the right time.
Yeah. I mean, they were talked
I
about.
Mean, that's what the trade deadline is, right? Like, making the right decision right then.
They went from being a terrible organization for Deshaun Watson wanting out and them not letting him go. To now they look stupid for not letting him go, right?
Yeah, it's a complete switch
of public
opinion.
Now they're almost like the victims, the Texans. But, I mean, if you look at it strictly from a football perspective, and we'll just keep it there. But
going back to Washington, do you see them getting up into top 10? Because I kind of did with the only way I can see them trade top 10 is if Trey Lance goes in the last 5 picks. And then Detroit, who's been wanting to trade down and wanting to move around, that would be a good trade partner with Washington, giving up 2 first-round picks and maybe some mid-round picks. Oh, that's dirty. from Oshie.
Backstrom just made the Bruins defense look silly.
And we are reporting live from the
and then TJ game. Oshie just collected the guard. Look at this.
Gorgeous. Man, you cannot get a better assist and play than that.
God damn, that was beautiful from both TJ Oshie and
Nicky B.
Yeah, but going back to Washington, yeah, so that's what I think. I think they might just get an option, but I don't envision them not drafting a QB this draft. It's weird.
So you think at some point in the draft we'll get some QB, whether it's we make an aggressive move in the first or if we settle on like a Trask or a Kellen Mond
in the third? Yeah, if we make an aggressive move in the first, then that's that, but if we don't do that move, I expect it to go only on day three. I don't think we're going to pick a QB in day two. And yeah, I'm not
so fourth round or later.
Fourth round or later, it'll probably be Jamie Newman. We do have two third round picks, but it'll probably be Jamie Newman anyway.
I don't like Jamie Newman.
You're a Kyle Trask guy, which is weird. There's so much going against him.
Define the Kyle Trask guy, but I like Trask. I'll tell you why I like Trask, because I think he's going to be a starter in the NFL in the future. He's not going to be a top 10 starter, but he's going to be a starter.
But like even like Kirk Cousins coming out had a higher ceiling than Kyle Trask did coming out. Because Kirk Cousins had a better arm than Kyle Trask. He had even like he wasn't a complete statue in the pocket, though.
Cousins wasn't, I mean, he was productive and he was what, like a 3-year captain. So I mean, he had a lot of experience.
He's definitely a better prospect.
But I think Kyle Trask has done more. I think he's accomplished more in the college level in terms of doing it against SEC opponents, and he's done it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And he had a really, really solid year this past year. The thing about Trask is that he's not athletic at all, and he gets some of those plays that an athletic quarterback can make, he just gets massively exposed.
Isn't it weird, though, like the shift between wanting athletic quarterbacks and not wanting athletic quarterbacks? Like, you remember, like, all the rage was just, like, before then, oh, we have to get that prescient pocket passer. It's like, who cares about these Tyrod Taylors of the world and, like, whatever have you. Like, that short, I forgot what his name, that went to the Seahawks. Not Russell Wilson, someone else.
Doug Flutie?
Not Doug Flutie, but it was, like, a CFL guy. But, like, there's always a shift, and I think in the draft, the way you win is by taking value that, like, people seem to disregard, like, in terms of some, like, negatives or something, and really emphasizing the positives of that player and having him fit within your system. And those are, like, the market inefficiencies that you have to capitalize on, and Kyle Trask could be it. I just don't see it.
No. I like him only because I think his game can be transferred to the next level, but that doesn't mean the game is, like, phenomenal. It means that I would look at Kyle Trask in a year or two as an upgrade over Kyle Allen or Taylor Heinicke. It's not saying much, but
so you take, like, a third round Kyle pick, Trask third round?
I would take him in the third, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, if he's there in the third round and there's somebody else that would fit us better and contribute right away, I'm not saying, like, you have to take Trask. So, the original question is, do you think we're going to make a QB move in the draft? I think it's pretty likely that we're going to draft a QB somewhere in this draft. I'd like to see Trey Lance. If he's sitting there at like 7 or 8.
Fuck North Dakota State.
Well, yeah. Well, you know what? He beat JMU's ass, but you know
what? JMU got bumped.
He
didn't
beat them with his arm, though. He just ran against them. He couldn't stop that.
He can redeem himself among us JMU brethren by coming to DC and playing
also,
good football. You know what I mean?
After Trey Lance secured for the draft and football starting again, North Dakota sucks with their QBs. They are not putting up near what Trey Lance is putting up.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Well, I mean, you had Wentz, and then you had Easton Stick,
yeah,
who's like a backup on the Chargers.
Yeah,
and Trey Lance. I mean, Trey Lance, Mike. My comp for him, strictly football, has always been Colin Kaepernick, but a little bit more polished as a passer coming out of college. Their builds are very, very similar.
I just compare him straight up to Cam Newton because it's just like the inaccuracy at deep, just the way he can truck people, even though it is the FCS level, who cares? Like, if you can truck people, you can truck people, especially at a quarterback when you have so many rules protecting you and stuff like that.
So,
and neither one of those comps are bad because, I mean, you think about what Kaepernick did under good coaching. I mean, they were a consistently good team in the Super Bowl the 1 year and the NFC title game. And then I think it was kind of just a combination of bad coaching and, like, injuries that kind of messed up Kaepernick really before the all the other stuff. But that to the side, and you have Cam Newton, who obviously had a really good career with the Panthers. I think you have a good building culture, a good coach to manage a guy like that. I think Trey Lance could be a really good player in the NFL.
Yeah. I hope we move up for him. I just don't see us. I can see us doing it, but I think the draft board, how it will fall, it probably won't be possible. Maybe Falcons choose Lance at 4.
Could be. The Falcons are really the... Well, I mean, I'm curious to see what percentage or what chance there is that the 49ers actually take Mac Jones. I don't think that's going to happen because that would blow up
a lot of draft boards.
It's got to be Fields, and that's, I think, what people are expecting.
Yeah.
But if it is Mac Jones, all of a sudden guys with Justin Fields and Trey Lance on their board are going to be like, oh, okay. So that's going to make it a little interesting, and that's going to make it interesting for us because if one of those guys drops to like 8, you know, you might leapfrog the Broncos and pull the trigger. But the Falcons at 4 are very interesting because they could go quarterback. They could go best guy in the draft, Kyle Pitts, and, you know, keep rolling with Matt Ryan. They restructured Matt Ryan, so it looks
like it'll be hard to get rid of. If Falcons do draft him, they're going to have to be satisfied with having Lance sit for 2 years, basically. So, like, that could be the best for him.
Yeah. It'd be the best for him, but number 4 overall is a lot of draft capital.
Yeah. I don't think they really have any trade-down suitors anyway, because the Bengals are saying that they... Not Bengals, sorry. The Broncos are saying they don't want to do it. They'd rather just, like, stay at 9, pick Micah Parsons or something.
The problem with trading up to 4 right now is that you've got really 5 quarterbacks that are going to go in the first round, and you don't 100% know what the first 3 are looking like. So
you know what the first 2 are looking at.
You know what the first 2 are. The third one's a little murky. So I think once those 3 picks happen, you might see some activity. The Falcons might have some activity. Like, if Mac Jones is the 3rd pick, I think when the Falcons get on the clock, they're going to have a bunch of people calling them. But right now, nobody's going to trade for that pick. But on draft night, when they're on the clock, it could happen. Depends how things play out. You know, things always play out kind of weird, a little differently than you expect. So
other than QB, another position the draft is good at is running back. We kind of do have a need for one that can be the change of pace for Gibson and McKissick. And I think...
Hey! Don't forget Peyton Barber.
Peyton Barber is the Michael A. Taylor of the Washington football team.
That's not
MVP.
That is unfair because Michael A. Taylor is a god.
You know what? Peyton Barber is better than Michael A. Taylor.
They have in every sense roles. Of the word. It's like Peyton Barber. If you need a yard, Peyton Barber will get you that yard. If you need 2 yards. Peyton Barber will get you 1 yard. He is that kind of
running back. No. If you need a yard, he'll get you a 60-yard touchdown run.
You could get a yard.
If you need a 60-yard touchdown run, he'll give you 55 yards and a T-shirt.
I like the T-shirt. But
exactly. You like everything from Peyton Barber, just like you hate everything from Michael A. Taylor.
If you had an offensive line that blocked their balls off for you, do you think you can get a yard in the NFL, or would you die, like, right after?
Oh, I'd die. But Peyton, what does this have to do with the GOAT?
I'm saying, like, is there a difference between us playing running back and Peyton Barber playing running back?
Peyton is the GOAT.
He just goes forward for one yard.
He is the Michael A. Taylor of the Washington football team.
He is miserable, and we need to replace him.
I agree.
Day 3, though.
I think we need to replace you.
Oh,
let's bring in somebody else to be the
Let's bring in Peyton Barber as a podcast host.
Here comes, what is it, Grant Hathaway?
So you don't want to consider Najee Harris at 19?
No, but I've heard of Travis Etienne at 51. That could make sense. It's just a lot to give a running back. Remember, we got burned on another second-round running back.
Yes, we did.
You also did pretty well on another second-round running back.
Liddell Betts.
When was McKissick?
McKissick was a undrafted, free agent.
And he came from the Seahawks.
Oh. Yeah.
But Liddell Betts, the last second-round running back was Liddell third? Betts.
Yeah.
They're pretty close.
A long time ago. 2003, I think we drafted him. Liddell Betts.
Yeah.
He was a second-rounder, I remember
that. We have not had good success with second-round running backs.
We haven't had good success with second-round anything.
The Baltimore Ravens have been
Lions,
pretty successful.
Lions, I thought, had a good one. He just got injured a lot.
Second-round pick that actually panned out was Preston Smith, and then he ended up leaving. Yeah. And then Trent Murphy was like kind of okay, and those are in the last 20 years, those are the top two second round picks.
I'd rather just trade away your second round pick again.
I was gonna say, if there's an opportunity to trade up in the draft, if it costs next year's first, so be it. If it's for Trey Lance, I think you do it. But second round picks have just not been great for us.
I feel like DC media though is just gonna be like, when is Trey Lance gonna start? Is he gonna start now? Like every Fitzpatrick bad game, it's gonna be miserable.
That's what they do, and there's a lot of them that are covering the football team, so they're always going to ask those questions. And I think if you're Ron Rivera and company, you shield them away from all that crap. The problem with Dwayne, one of the many problems with Dwayne Haskins, is that he's going on freaking Twitter all the time and reading what people have to say, and caring too much about that. It's like, you gotta just shut all that out. Like, if you're smart and you're being drafted to be developed, you should just not have social media. You should focus on your craft.
Oh, no. Are you one of these boomers?
Yes.
No, I mean, honestly,
I'm one of those boomers.
Honestly, there is some truth in that, especially at the beginning of the career. Like,
do it later.
For a young player like that, is like that first 6 months, I think you should try to just stay away from it. Because the first 6 months, I think, can make or break your career. And if you're spending too much time on social media and seeing what people think of you and hearing opinions that you don't need to hear, it is probably going to distract.
It's a distraction. And
after those first 6 months, I think, yeah, sure, do whatever you want. But those first 6 months are key. Even the first year is key.
The thing with these guys, they're 21, 22 years old. They still have some maturity things to work out. So it's like, when we drafted Haskins, like, we knew he had some maturity things.
They still wanted to draft, like, the coaches wanted to draft him, just not the first. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll just take him with our second-round pick and join our second-round bus, like, that, and take Montez Sweat or Brian Burns with the first-round pick. Yeah. Which would have been excellent,
which we did anyways. We just gave up an extra second to do it, but...
Yeah, I mean...
For Sweat, it's fine.
The Colts didn't even end up great after that trade anyway.
No, their draft that year, and with our picks, they didn't...
And do
well with the second that we gave him, I think they took Jonathan Taylor, so that might have been a good pick.
I don't think they got Jonathan. I think it was like Michael Pittman and someone else.
One of those picks was ours, right?
Yeah, so. It was definitely Michael Pittman. Okay. I remember.
Well, it was Pittman. You're right.
Yeah.
Because
I wanted Michael Pittman. I was just like, oh man, he would have been so great with us. But
yeah, maturity things, I mean, those are legitimate things you have to ask.
When seems guys to be the common topic today, maturity.
Maturity. Yeah. Maybe it should have been the podcast title.
I mean, you're drafting 21-year-olds. They need a little bit of time to develop in your building, with your scheme, with the teammates and all that. And it's like, once you're established, you know what you're doing. It's like, you can afford a little bit of distraction here and there. But it's when you're in that early development of your pro career, I think it's better to not have those distractions. And that's why sometimes in, like, the college game, you've got these really hard-ass coaches that are really successful, like Urban Meyer and Nick Saban. And, these are guys that run very tight ships. Chip Kelly was, able to do it in college, but it just doesn't work in the pros when you have really established guys who know what they're doing and can afford a little bit more.
I mean, there's a give and take,
There's a give and take. I think when you're younger, you need a little more...
Yeah.
A little fewer, you need some
more structure.
Yeah, more structure.
I think there's also, like, you have to take calculated risks for, like, diving into someone's background. But, like, for us as a franchise, it's burned us a lot. Like, looking into Darius Geis and all those other players. But, like, I know some players, like, for teams where they've, like, looked into them, they're like, all right, we'll clear them, and it's fine. Like, Frank Clark is one of them. He played really well for the Seahawks and et cetera.
Chiefs now.
Yeah. And you have to do a lot of research if you're going to dive into someone
red flags. 50-50. Like a Honey Badger.
Yeah, yeah, he's the biggest one. Like
he's a massive success story for a guy that got kicked off of LSU and
That's
fourth round pick in the NFL.
He's a good story. He's a fun story.
He's a really good story. But those stories don't happen very often. More often than not, they flame out. Yeah. I mean, you had a guy last year, Isaiah Wilson, the tackle from Georgia. He's out of the NFL.
He's not going to play an NFL game, yeah.
The Titans got rid of him for swapping sevenths, and then the Dolphins already cut him. So
first round pick all the way to swapping seventh. That's incredible.
And the what Titans were you saying, Chris? We did our due diligence. I'm like,
They got the most for him.
I mean, look at Josh Gordon. How many times has he been suspended again and again and again and again and again?
That's true, but he did give the Browns one really good goddamn year.
Yeah, but
that was it.
You can even do your research, and players can fall back into old ways.
I think generally it's better just investment-wise to just avoid those kind of guys. If there are any maturity questions, I think you just got to avoid
them. Yeah, because, I mean, what? Out of, let's say, like 10 players, one of them probably pans out.
Maybe one of them.
You're giving someone with maturity concerns millions of dollars and asking them to, like, still show up to practice.
It's just not worth it that early in the draft for, like, first, second, maybe even third for immature guys. Fourth through seventh, like, yeah, I can see, like, you taking a risk on a guy who might have some maturity issues. But at the back end there, fourth to seventh is not going to make or break your team. One through three is most of the time.
Yeah. But you can also get guys in the fourth through the seventh who don't have any maturity issues. They're just raw as shit, and they need some time to develop.
Some are raw. Some are just unathletic. You're going to, at the fourth, seventh, they're just going to be players.
Max Crosby.
He's athletic.
He just needed to put on some weight.
Yeah.
And he did. He did. And look at him now.
Look at him now. Vernon, you were saying something?
I was just going to say, this is all very stimulating conversation.
Cool. Yes, it is.
You are finished smoking your pack of cigarettes there?
Giving out some of the best draft advice.
I just went through one. I still have to go through another.
All right.
Anyway, let's go ahead and finish things off talking about... Well, unfortunately, we saved the worst for last in this case.
I think the Wizards for last is going to be a constant.
The only team that has no answers anywhere.
They are 19-33. They are ranked 13th in the East.
Woo. Still come back, right? They're still only like a game or two out of that.
So 19-33. Funny. So per Sports Illustrated, they had this to say. When Russell Westbrook shares the floor with Bradley Beal, the Wizards score about 110.7 points per 100 possessions, which is good for about the 19th best offense in the league.
That's still not
when Beal is alone, that number ticks up ever so slightly to 113.1 points per 100 possessions, which is right outside the top 10. So, Sports Illustrated,
so
Westbrook
top 10.
So basically what Sports Illustrated's analysis says is Russell Westbrook is worthless.
This was like right before the trade deadline. With some pieces added, it could be different, but Westbrook is
See 3 points isn't that big a deal to me. If it was like a 10-15 point difference, then yeah, I could see it. But frankly, this analysis just says to me, okay, there's a little bit of variation depending on if Russ plays or not. But I don't see this as Russ being a significant deterrent.
Wait, there's actually a scientific name for this.
When Westbrook plays without Beal, it's 98.6.
Well, the offensive rating is, I assume that's different from points per possession, per 100 possessions.
I think they're talking about points per possession. They just use a different word for it.
Lord, that's
but I think
so bad.
There is a scientific term for Westbrook bringing the team down. It's the Westbrook brick effect, where he just keeps on taking awful shots.
He's been doing this. Like this isn't like,
well, he was good at it at one point and now he's not. He just keeps taking them.
Whatever, man. The team's a mess.
Westbrook.
Fire Scott Brooks. Until then, I don't care about that team.
What do you think about Tommy Shepard with this trade being
just
done?
Tear it all down, start it all over.
I agree. I think Tommy Shepard
sale.
He didn't get like the 16 years that Ernie got. I think Tommy Shepard this trade
I think
is putting he put himself out there with this trade and it ain't working.
I think we should replace the Wizards with the Mystics for this podcast from now going forward. because they're obviously a much more successful team and aren't marred with success. Because just giving me the death look over here.
Nick's
we would,
like
we would add about 80.
Nick's like Nick's TV like Nick, if we Nick's like track of them. Nick's like I already don't watch the NBA. You expect me to start caring about the WNBA?
They're a better team though. Like objectively,
they are. That's the thing. The Mystics are the better team. It's just that the audience of the Wizards versus the Mystics is it's very there's a very large gap.
Difference. There's a slight difference, Varun. I don't know what you're talking about. Equality.
Okay, moving on after
Chris
we get canceled.
And with that, I think we should wrap things up before we get canceled. All right, thank you guys for listening to the DC.
Hold on. I will say one good thing about the Wizards is that when they traded off Brown Jr. and Wagner, who, I mean, Brown Jr., we've always been misusing for years ever since we drafted him. And Mo Wagner, I think, was just needed. Daniel Gafford has actually been stepping up as a big man for us, and he's pretty good.
And like, an irrelevant trade is irrelevant. This team's a mess.
It's a good trade with a good player on an irrelevant team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. I mean,
he's good. I like him.
Is he under contract for the next few years? Or is he
he better be under contract or that trade's... That's a useless trade. Otherwise, he's got to be under contract for at least a year.
He's also really young, like 22, I think.
He's got two more years on his deal after this. Although one of them is a club option. Okay, so
we'll probably take up the club option if he keeps playing like this.
Because it's cheap. It's 1.7 and 1.9 million.
There's no way you make a trade with those guys between two teams that aren't that great if. They aren't under team control for a little while.
Yeah, so he's got control for the next 2 years pretty cheap.
Otherwise, you're just trading two players for no reason.
Yeah, but he's a good fit. I like him. I like his game.
22 years old, so he's got some room to grow, too, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But maybe he'll be a piece for whoever comes in next time. But yeah, I think with the Wizards, you just get a clean house.
I think
there's no reason to keep Tommy Shepherd around.
He'll definitely be part of the starting five, I think.
I get that Tommy Shepherd didn't pick a coach, but you know, if you wanted to pick a coach, you were the GM now, you could have done it, you didn't do it.
Chris just wants to give the pink slip to everyone in the building.
I agree.
Scott Brooks sucks because he's just a terrible coach. Same. Yes, I know. Tommy Shepherd sucks because he traded for a mediocre Westbrook.
That was still kind of weird.
On the bright side, the Wizards will probably be able to hold on to that first-round pick they got for him.
So honestly, it doesn't matter if John Wall is good or bad because the Rockets just are terrible.
Yeah, that was an irrelevant trade.
Big trade. Just, yeah, bad teams.
How's John Wall looking with Houston? Any good?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now.
While you look that up, let us wrap things up. Thank you guys for listening to the DC Sports.
What about our fans that want
to
know about how John Wall's doing? Is this going to cut it off there?
Why don't I do the outro, and then by then
Say it right after the outro.
I got two headlines I want to read real quick about John Wall. The first headline about John Wall: NBA star John Wall invests in a cannabis company. And the second headline
is right.
John Wall, Rockets John Wall, poor effort and blowout loss. So that's all that's being talked about John Wall. So I think
are definitely two events that are not tied together.
Yeah, it gave me enough of a reason to understand. It tells me enough about what's going on in Houston.
Yeah, well, everything going on in Houston is a train wreck.
True. That is true.
All right.
And with that, let's wrap things up. Thank you guys for listening to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I've been your host and moderator. Joined, as always, by three of my good friends, the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We will have links to those in the description of the episode. Until then, thank you guys for listening. See y'all next week, and keep supporting DC Sports.
Cheers.